Terry spoke to the Beastie Boys in 2006 when they released a concert film called Awesome, I Shot That. Adam Yauch directed the film using footage from cameras that were distributed to fans in the audience of one of their New York concerts.
Now, the movie was shot in Madison Square Garden. The first time you performed there, you opened for Madonna. Now, I understand on that tour, her fans booed you just about in every performance.
Oh, they did a lot more than that.
What did they do?
Some audience members were crying, actually. Yeah, it was touching, but actually,
I remember getting yelled at by a parent because we were cursing, and they were like, "How can you do that when I'm here with my
child,
young child?"
What was it like relatively early in your career to be booed so frequently on somebody else's tour?
We got up for it, really.
You get kind of like into pro wrestler mode where you kind of get into it for a while. It's
kind
of funny.
Come on! That's where the whole King of the Paramount came
from. Yeah, we got into a mode for a while where we'd come out and they wouldn't boo, and then we'd try and do things to get them to boo. Like they would be applauding, and we'd just say, you know, it's really hard to get up here, and you should...
we need to be appreciated by you people.
What's it like now to sing things that you wrote, 20, 25 years ago, when you were much younger? You've changed a lot over the years. Do the lyrics still fit you?
It's a little awkward at times. It's a bit awkward.
Some of them are dumb, but it's just fun, Sometimes it's fun to just play the old songs anyway, no matter how stupid they are.
Have you revised any lyrics that you're no longer comfortable with? Lyrics from
Yeah, I know I do personally. Some of the stuff that I say on License to Ill, I say some real dumb stuff, and so... You know, I like the song, and the song's important to, people that like us or listen to us, and so it's important. So, if that's what people want, we should, why not play the songs? But there's some things that I don't like to say.
Can you give us an example of something you've changed?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but just some dumb things about, like, I don't even know.
It's usually the more sexist ones, the ones you switch up.
I do have one that I'm particularly proud of, and I'm not sure even who it came from, but in No Sleep to Brooklyn, I say, and Yauch's in the back at the Mahjong board.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure what is the original.
I don't even know if we could say it on the air.
Yeah, I don't even know if we could. But I just particularly like that because it kind of really reflects where we're at now.
Your first hit was Fight for Your Right. And Adam Yauch, in the liner notes of A Best Of Collection, you write that the song began as a goof and that it started as a satire of I Wanna Rock kind of songs. So what did you have in mind when you wrote that?
Yeah, basically that. I think you summed it. I was just kind of like just one of those like smoking in the boys' room type things. Just thought it was kind of funny, but I don't think we realized that it was going to be the sort of the main focus of the album. That it was going to, like, I think the way we were looking at it, we were just kind of making this dumb song that had sit somewhere on the album. But I think that CBS and Rick and saw it as being able to be something much larger than what we imagined, and they kind of made it the main focus of the album.
Let me play the record, and then we'll talk about it a little bit more.
Okay.
Fantastic. And this is the Beastie Boys, Fight for Your Right.
Kick it!
Okay, so this is like your first big single, really big hit, and you're saying it started out kind of as a goof. So did your fans misunderstand who you were?
I think maybe we just ended up with a different bunch of fans than we expected. Like, I think if we could have picked at the time, like if I could have known, like how much that record would have, that song would have informed everyone about the album, to use Mike's word, informed. I probably, my choice would have been more to pick like a different song to be the main single, like Hold It Now or Slow and Low or Posse in Effect or one of the other cuts. But anyway, that song was the one that informed everyone. And so next thing you knew, we would go out and play shows and look, and the whole place would just be full of like frat boys, like drunken frat boys. And so it was, so there we were.
You know, we were talking earlier about going from punk to hip hop. So I don't imagine you had a big, you know, frat boy audience for your band when you were playing punk.
We definitely didn't when we were punk, and then also when we were playing hip hop, like what we came out of by hooking up with Russell, we got like a really good education in terms of going on tour and opening up for Run DMC. Like we were on a tour opening for Run DMC, Houdini, mm-hmm. LL Cool J. So that was like a completely hip hop audience. So to then all of a sudden go into this world of like kind of like, I don't know, I guess a more pop audience and like kind of college kids wanting to party and drink beer and go see a Beastie Boys show, that was completely foreign to us and beyond anything we ever imagined.
Adam, in those liner notes, you write, by drinking so much beer and acting like sexist macho jerks, we actually became just that. So, did you feel like...
I never said that.
did you feel like you were becoming the image that you created?
I think so, yeah. I think in a way, you know, it's almost like we started out kind of like goofing on it, but then just sort of became it in a way.
It's the become what you hate syndrome. Yeah.
You set out with an agenda of parody, and then a certain amount of time goes by and you kind of cross that line.
Yeah, like you parody something enough. You know?
It's kind of like when you go to England and you do a British accent the whole time, and then you come home and you have a fake British accent.
So was there a point where
you know what I mean?
Yeah, was there a point where no? was there a point where you said to yourselves, "We crossed the line. We've become our own parody."
Definitely, but I don't. I think that point almost came like we had to kind of get off of tour, and almost have a second away from that to sort of assess and realize, look where everything was at.
And so, what changed when you had that realization?
We switched to weed.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we made Paul's Boutique.
Which was very different from which I think some fans loved and some fans felt disappointed because it was a departure. What was different about it?
Well, weed is a good word. It weeded out some fans, too. And that was okay.
And found some fans that were weeded out.
Yeah, and the fans that got, that moved on to... U2 or Skritti Politti or I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think like with Paul's Boutique, you had two things going on. You had like people who probably expected like Fight for Your Right to Party Part 2, and they were very disappointed and were like, this isn't what I want at all.
And they got weeded out.
And they got weeded out. And then there were the fans that were like, wow, this is whatever. This is something I'm really into. And they got weeded out too.
They got weeded out.
They got in a different meaning of the word.
The Beastie Boys speaking with Terry Gross. More after a break. This is Fresh Air.